guys, so welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing well, Laura. How are you today?
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Tomorrow is a special occasion for me. Tomorrow is my French Bulldog's first birthday, and I've went a little ridiculous. I got him a hat. I got him some treats. I got him a piece of steak for his birthday because I couldn't find any dog cakes, but...
Oh my gosh.
He's a spoiled little Frenchie, that's for sure.
I think he'll much rather enjoy the steak than the dog cake.
True, but supposedly they make dog cakes that are like, you know, made from meat products, but I couldn't find one anymore. Yeah, I couldn't find one. Everybody said, yeah, you can get it. I'm like, where? And they were like, oh, just go to the pet store, whatever. I don't know. I don't know where they're getting them from, but I can't do it. So steak it is for him.
Yeah. Now, are you going to be having a steak with him?
Yes. Except, okay. You know, his will be more on the rare side, and mine's going to be a little bit more on the brown side.
Yeah. Well, he's going to enjoy that for sure.
I hope so. He is my little spoiled boy.
Yeah. I mean, aren't they all? What is a dog if it's not spoiled?
True. Very, very true. So I'm definitely looking forward to this week's topic of the week. We are doing St. Patrick's Day episode. And I think we got some good stories for you this week.
Yeah. And like I had said before we hit record, I am a little disappointed because I was kind of hoping that there was going to be some crazy pagan rituals or traditions that had been linked back to this, but not so much with this holiday. But I think for some reason, I feel like there's some stuff that has to go with Easter, which I definitely want to cover if you're down for that.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely down for doing an Easter one as well. And I'm with you. You know, when we did the Valentine's Day one, we found some really good stories with that one. But St. Patrick was kind of uncontroversial saint.
Yeah, pretty much for the most part. So, I mean, I have a little history on him and a little backstory, and I'll get into that. And then you can go forth with the stuff you have.
Yeah, I got some listing of some Irish types of ghosts, kind of things they see over there. And I got a few stories. And I'm kind of looking forward to hearing about the history of St. Patrick's, because I don't really know a whole lot about him.
Yeah, I didn't know a whole lot either. So St. Patrick lived around the time of the 5th century, and he's known for being the patron saint of Ireland. Now, he was actually born in Roman Britain, and he was kidnapped when he was about 16, and they brought him to Ireland as a slave. And then I guess it said that there was like pirates that kidnapped him. And then he later escaped and went back home, and then he returned to Ireland, and he is credited for bringing Christianity to the Irish people. St. Patrick is known for being seen with a three-leaf clover, and they're not exactly sure what the three-leaf clover represents, but there are some theories that it represents the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, the Holy Trinity of being a Christian. And that's how the clover or shamrock became part of St. Patrick's Day. And it's also interesting to learn that St. Patrick also wore blue, and it wasn't really just tied to green right away. And the knights in the Order of St. Patrick wore a color known as St. Patrick's Blue. Some of the history with St. Patrick's Day and being green, because Ireland is known as the Emerald Isle, and there's a green strip on the Irish flag, and the green strip is supposed to represent the Catholics, and the orange strip is supposed to represent Protestant, and then the white between the two colors is supposed to represent the peace between the two religions, which I never knew. So that's neat to learn also.
That is super neat to learn. And I just want to add a little thing here. When I was looking through the history, did you see why a four-leaf clover is considered so lucky and so rare?
No, I don't know that.
I don't remember where I saw it, but it was basically saying that if you found a four-leaf clover, that you would be the second coming of Christ. That's the fourth leaf. So you have the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, and then the fourth one is his second coming. And that's why it's so rare and quote-unquote lucky.
Oh, that's pretty neat. That's very neat.
I thought that was kind of cool, too. And about the flag, I never knew about the green. Well, I mean, I knew what their flag looked like, but I never really made the realization that that's what that flag stood for, the green, the orange, and the white. But it makes a lot of sense in the context of what you're saying, because there's always been some problems between the Catholics and the Protestants in Ireland.
Right. Following St. Patrick's death, which was believed to be March 17th, 461, which hence why St. Patrick's Day is on March 17th, because it is honoring his death date. And so that's how it started. And until the 1700s, St. Patrick's Day was a Roman Catholic feast only observed in Ireland. And after that, there started to become some Irish immigrants to America, and they started putting on parades to honor their culture, and it kind of just went to be widespread from there on, and it's celebrated throughout the whole entire world today.
That's sort of interesting that, you know, that the immigrants are the ones that really made St. Patrick's Day, you know, kind of a worldwide thing.
So there's also another part to St. Patrick's Day, and that's been linked to the leprechaun, or in Ireland, how they say it is I'm really not sure, because the spelling is very different than leprechaun is. The meaning means small-bodied fellow. They were also known for being shoe cobblers in the fairy world, and the term was laith progen. That's another word that's hard to say, meaning shoemaker, and this profession is what would earn them their pots of gold. So they're known for being extremely greedy and very selfish and just grumpy little 2 to 3 foot tall little creatures.
I guess that's kind of how, you know, when you think of a leprechaun, you think of a little short, like kind of older guy per se, you know, like real wrinkly, big nose.
Right. And that's what they have here. It says over the years, the history of leprechauns has become associated with everything green, and they are now often depicted as old men dressed in a hat and a suit of green, wearing buckled shoes and a smoking pipe. So back in the day, they were actually said to have worn red and not green. And they were said to have worn like a little suit that had like a gold lace trim on it. And it said that leprechauns are known for their trickery, which they often use to protect their much fabled treasure. And leprechauns have had their own holiday on May 13th, but they are also celebrated on St. Patrick's Day, with many dressing up as fairies. So it's interesting, because I never knew that leprechauns had their own day of celebration, or a day that they were actually celebrated. So since it's close to March, it just kind of gotten lumped into St. Patrick's Day because it is Irish folklore.
That makes a lot of sense. I can see how that would happen over the years.
And it also says that that there are no female leprechauns. And it's just something that there's some kind of magical creature with mysterious qualities. So don't ask me how there's more than one of them with no females, because I don't have an answer for that.
Sounds like it would make for a good movie, you know, something about female leprechauns.
Yeah.
Like a good scary movie, you know, like, you know, they made the, I think there was an old, like, movie from the 80s that were called The Leprechauns, you know, where they were, you know, terrorizing people, but we could make one out of female leprechauns instead.
I mean, yeah, when I was doing research, I came across some of the websites use those images from that movie. And I was like, oh, why on earth would you use that out of everything you could use? I never saw those movies and I don't ever plan on it because that just, no thank you.
I think I remember seeing the first one, but I mean, it's probably, those movies were old in the 80s. I'm pretty sure that's when they were made. But yeah, they're...
I think so too.
Yeah, and there was like, I want to say there was like three or four of them, but I think so. Yeah, but they were just kind of like scary movies, you know, like Gremlins or Freddy Krueger or something along those lines.
Yeah. Fun fact, did you actually know that Freddy Krueger is based off of, oh, I forget what country it is. I believe it's an Asian country where these, I think it was just males, would have these type of nightmares and they'd see an entity in their nightmares and it would literally kill them.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, how cool is that? I learned something new today.
That's terrifying. That's absolutely terrifying. You know, to go to sleep and being like, oh my God, am I going to have this nightmare next that's killing all these people?
I think for me, it's interesting that, you know, all these pop culture figure or movies, really, they have their roots in old stories. You know, even if, you know, they're not widely known, somebody had heard that story and made a movie out of it. It's kind of interesting.
Right. So that's pretty much, I didn't have a whole lot because, like I said, I thought that we would have had a little more into some crazy pagan stuff, which is fascinating to me, but not so much with this guy. So
he's a boring saint. Well, that's okay.
I don't think you should say that. You're going to have a lot of Catholic people pissed off, dude.
I mean, to be fair, there's nothing wrong with being quote unquote boring. You know, he lived his life. He converted a lot of pagans to Christianity. So, I mean, he had a good life. He just didn't have a whole lot of what we would consider interesting stories.
Controversy.
There we go. So for my part, I looked at the same sort of thing that you did, you know, kind of went through St. Patrick, his life story and looked for, you know, some stories that would be interesting, you know, kind of on the ghost side of things. Didn't really find a whole lot. However, what I did find was a listing of Irish ghosts and what they call some of the creatures that we'd be more familiar with. So the first one I came across is called the Abhartat, and it is a creature from early Irish legend comparable to a vampire. And it says perhaps it's no coincidence that Bram Stoker was Irish. The Abhartat was said to be an evil dwarf who possessed great powers and used them to torment every village he came across. One particular village called on a great chieftain to come and slay the tyrannical Abhartat. The chieftain killed the creature and buried him to the relief of the villagers. However, the next day, the Abhartat reappeared in the village. The chieftain killed it, buried again, but it would not stay dead. Eventually, he consulted a druid who told him the Abhartat had to be buried face down to prevent it from rising from the grave. That's the first one I found. I found quite a few, actually. The next one would be the Dirig Dhu. The Dirig Dhu was another monster with traits similar to that of a vampire. The tragic tale tells of a beautiful young woman who fell in love with a peasant. Her greedy father forced her to marry a wealthy but cruel chieftain instead. The chieftain locked her up in his stronghold so she couldn't escape and go to her true love. Eventually, she lost hope and took her own life. This was not the end of the story, however. Her restless spirit rose from the grave and sought revenge on her selfish father and cruel husband. She visited each of them and sucked the blood from their bodies until they were dead. It is said that the Dirig Dhu, which means a red bloodsucker, rises from the grave once a year and uses her beauty to seduce male victims and drink their blood. Which to me almost sound like a succubus from, I believe that was Greek or Roman. Is it Roman? I think it's Roman. It was a succubus or the succubi. Kind of sounds similar to that one.
Right. And how interesting, I just want to, you know, before you go on to your next story, how interesting is it that there's always these funny things of the old stories that you hear where they bury creatures or people that they're thought to be vampires or cursed or whatever, where they buried them face down. And then there's those cases of, I think, like up in the New England states years and years ago, where people were accused of being vampires, they would bury them, they'd cut their hearts out or something. It's just interesting.
I've heard of them cutting their head off too, like cutting their head off and like putting...
Oh, have you?
And yeah, like, and I don't know if it's an American one or maybe in Europe where they would cut their head off, but their head had to be placed between their knees when they were buried, and that would keep them from rising from the grave.
Whoa, I never heard that one before.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Of course, you always have the stake through the heart too. You can't forget about that one.
Oh, for sure. I wonder how they come about these things, if it's just something that someone back then said to do, or if they actually had some kind of reasoning to it.
You know, it seems like a lot of these stories, you know, even though they're really embellished, they all contain like a small grain of truth somewhere. That, you know, that small grain kind of got embellished over the years till we get to the stories that we have today. So maybe that, you know, cutting the head off thing was... Maybe, who knows, you know, maybe it's like an accident that happened and, you know, it got embellished by priests or druids over the years. That's a really good question. The next one that I'm going to go through is probably the most famous version of Irish ghosts, and it's called the Banshee. The Banshee is perhaps the most famous monster in Ireland's dark catalog of ghosts and ghouls. While details vary depending on the source, the Banshee is usually described as a female entity who lets out a blood-curdling shrieks and wails. She is said to be an omen of death, so if you hear the cry of the Banshee in the night, it is said a member of your family will die soon. Some believe that each family has its own Banshee, while others see her as an omnipresent herald of death. Her warning of impending demise is often followed by a visit from another terrifying demon, the Dullahan. I think a lot of us have heard about banshees, but I never knew that it was, I thought it was more like just a shrieking spirit that would drive you mad. I never heard of it as a warning of your impending death, which that's kind of interesting.
I'm familiar with the Banshee and I do like the stories, and I feel like she gets a bad rep because I feel like she's only just warning people. She's not actually causing them to die. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, yes, she is a shrieking ghost. I've never heard of, however, it was the one that you said that is followed by her. Do you have any more info on that guy?
I do. So the Dullahan, which is this was the next one. The Dullahan, which means the dark man, is like the Irish version of the Headless Horseman. He roams across Ireland with his decapitated head under his arm, either on a back of a black horse with flaming eyes, or driving a dark carriage pulled by six black horses. When he stops riding, someone dies. Yeah, yeah.
No way. I'm totally interrupting you, but I love the Headless Horseman story and Sleepy Hollow. And I went to Sleepy Hollow for the very first time this past October, and it was so exciting. So to find out that another country has this legend is very interesting to me.
And here's the funny thing about that is that this version, the Dullahan, would be the predecessor for the Headless Horseman in America. That's where the story came from.
Oh, how freaking cool.
Right. So to tie the two of these together, when the wail of a banshee is heard, the thundering hooves of the Dullahan's horse are sure to follow. Some tales say that this headless collector of souls throws buckets of blood on those he passes, while others say he simply calls out the name of the person who must join him. Some tales suggest that the Dullahan is afraid of gold, so any lonely traveler walking the roads on a dark night would be smart to keep some coins in their pocket.
Wow!
Yeah, like, I think it is interesting when I was reading this that it was the Headless Horseman story, which I'd never heard of the Dullahan, but, you know, I've heard of the Headless Horseman and Sleepy Hollow, of course.
Yeah, me neither. And where is he getting these buckets of blood from?
That's a really good question. Like, does he carry them on his horse? Or he just got, like, you know, buckets held on his shoulders? Because I've never heard that portion of it. Like, you know, I've always heard, you know, the decapitated head and riding the horse with flaming eyes. Never really heard about the bucket of blood. So the next one that I'm going to go on is called the Slog. I think that's how you say it. So the Slog are dead sinners whose souls come back in the form of malevolent spirits. Slogs are said to come from the West in flying packs, searching for houses where someone is dying so they can steal away their spirits. Those who believe in the Slog always keep their west-facing windows locked so the evil spirits can't enter their homes.
When it said that they fly in packs, it reminded me of The Wizard of Oz with the flying monkeys that come in groups, which I hate.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Really?
Yes. When I heard that, like, coming in, you know, like the Wicked Witch of the West, and she had her packs of monkeys, that's exactly what I thought of. I wonder if they got, like, inspiration from that story for that movie.
That's what I was just going to say, too. We should look that up.
Yes.
I was just adding that I absolutely hate that movie. It is so creepy. It's like my sister's favorite movie, and I don't understand how.
Do you want to hear a funny story about me?
Sure.
When I was in middle school, I was in the drama club in middle school. And, you know, in drama club, you always do a play. Well, or we did back in school. And I actually played the Wizard of Oz, the actual wizard in the play. And the only reason I got the part was because I was the shortest guy in drama club. And so when, you know, when the wizard's revealed in the movie, he's, you know, small statured. And that's the reason I got the part for the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, no.
It was a fun time. I mean, the play was great. And it was fun to be like one of the main characters throughout the whole thing. And you really had to, because the wizard is this, you know, kind of presented as an all powerful, you know, and then when he actually comes out, he's just this little bitty guy that, you know, really just power tripping.
Well, you grew up and you're much taller now. So I guess it is good.
Yes. It's funny. I think I was probably like 10. Or maybe 11 when that happened, and I was the shortest guy around. But yeah, I'm fairly normal now.
Oh, God. Okay, your next story.
Moving on. All right, the next one we're going to talk about is called Carmen. So Carmen is a Celtic goddess of evil magic, similar to a witch. She's a force of destruction traveling the country with her three sons with the sole purpose of destroying everything in her path. Her sons are called Dub, which means darkness, Dother, which means evil, and Dane, which means violence. She continued her reign of evil, spreading blight throughout the country until the people of Ireland called out for a kind of magical people called the Tuatha De Danann for help. They defeated Carmen and banished her sons from the island of Ireland for as long as water surrounded the land. And I was kind of thinking, you know, it kind of almost sounds like the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse type of story, but with their own kind of like little spin on it.
I could see that.
Even though there was only three, but kind of similar. I mean, not exactly, but...
But I mean, if you include her plus the three of them, that's four.
True. Very true. So, yeah. It's so funny, like, how many of these stories, even though they originated in their own country, still kind of, they're similar to other stories that originated in different parts, you know, like the Four Horsemen Apocalypse would be from the Bible, per se.
And you know, it's funny, too, to go off on another tangent. I hope people don't get sick of listening to this, but tying that back to Sleepy Hollow, I don't know if you remember that there was a show on a couple years ago called Sleepy Hollow, and they tied in the Four Horsemen of, what is it, Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, or how, what is that, Four Horsemen?
I've heard it referred to as the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and I've also heard it called the Four Horsemen of Revelation.
Okay, I don't know if I've heard that one.
But I don't know which one's right.
Right, so I mean, but they do have the Four Horsemen in that show, so it's kind of neat how they pulled from that while doing that show. And that show, if you guys haven't watched it, it was really, really good. I think they had a low budget, so some of the special effects were kind of corny. But if you just, you know, used your imagination, it wasn't bad. But then at the end, it got kind of weird. And I don't think I ever fully finished the show, which I should, just so I know what happens.
I remember watching I remember watching the first season of it. Isn't the main character, isn't it Ichabod Crane?
Yeah.
Is the main character?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember watching that.
He was, if I do say myself, he was very attractive. I can't think of, I should look up his name really quick.
I remember he had real long, like brown hair, I
yeah,
believe.
It wasn't, yeah, it was like longer, and then I think in the second or third season, I think he cut it, maybe.
Ah, okay. It was a pretty cool show. You're right. I don't think I ever finished it, but I do remember watching the first probably two seasons, maybe.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure if it got canceled, because I think that's part of why I didn't really bother to watch the end of it, because when a show gets canceled, I just get, if I like it, I get mad, and I'm like, well, then there's no point of watching the rest of it. The same thing they did with that UFO show, Project Blue Book. I really liked
it. I watched that one, too.
Yeah, that show was so good, and it got canceled in, what, the second season?
I think so, yeah.
I was like, this is bullshit.
The whole reason I watched that was one of the main characters played in Game of Thrones. He was Peter Baelish, the little, or they call him Littlefinger in the Game of Thrones. But I saw he was in there, and I was like, I'll check it out. And it turned out to be very, very interesting.
Was he the person that played Dr. Alan Hynek?
Yes. Yep, that was him.
So I used to watch Vampire Diaries and his, I can't even remember his name in Project Blue Book, but he was in Vampire Diaries. And I remember him from that.
Such a cool show. So many good shows got canceled. So the next one that I have, and this will be the last one, is called the, and this one's going to be really hard, the Carathanich. Many know the legend of St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland, who banished all the snakes from the island. What some don't know, however, is that he also is said to banish all the demons, although one managed to escape. The Carathanach, or Fire Spitter, was St. Patrick's one remaining conquest. Some say that the Carathanach was the mother of the devil. St. Patrick summoned the fastest horse in Ireland to chase down the Carathanach. It was a long pursuit, and she tried to sabotage him by spitting fire as she went and poisoning all the wells. St. Patrick finally caught up with her at Hawk's Rock on the west coast of Ireland. He ambushed her and banished her with a single word. She drowned in the sea at the spot, creating a swell that would become to known as Hawk's Well. Never really heard that particular story, and I didn't see anything about that in St. Patrick's, you know, history, but I did find this. And that is a list of some of the Irish folklore that I found. And yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah, I've never heard of that one either. I did read that he did banish all the snakes, but looking that up, it had to do with the glaciers melting and flooding, and it made it uninhabitable for the snakes. Something like that. I'm probably totally butchering it. I read it late last night.
Yeah, I was reading somewhere where, yeah, basically there are no snakes in Ireland anyways. Like, there never really has been snakes there. And so that it's kind of funny that they say that he banished them all, even though he was born in the 4th century. But, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I read that too, that there never was. So, I don't know where that... I wonder if it's because, like, they depict snakes as being an evil creature and he's getting rid of evil or something.
Oh, it could be. So, you know, Christianity really thought that the pagans were evil. So with him bringing Christianity to the Irish island, maybe he's banishing the evil of paganism. Kind of like a metaphor almost.
That makes sense. Right. Yeah, you know what? Maybe it was written like that and somehow it got twisted. Right. Throughout the years.
Because if I'm not mistaken, snakes are a fairly large part of paganism. Like, they had, I don't want to say like gods, but like there were snake spirits that the pagans looked up to.
I didn't know anything about that.
I could be wrong, but I feel like that I saw that pagans... had something to do with like serpents and snakes and things along those lines.
You're probably right.
I could be wrong.
Just because I never heard of it, don't mean it's not true.
There's my folk. That is very, yeah. I mean, it's all right. So that's what I have for Irish folklore. And I think, Laura, that you have a story or two to share. So I'm looking forward to hearing those.
I do not. Remember, I got distracted and edited audio instead of looking for creepy leprechaun stories.
That's right. All right, we'll just edit all that out. That's fine. No problem.
I could just leave that there and let people get a laugh of what a hot mess I am. So,
all right, so I do have a few other stories, and you know, one of the reoccurring themes that you and I have talked about quite a bit are how black and white a lot of ghost stories are. There's not a whole lot of color to these particular ghosts, and I did find a couple of stories that they're fairly short ones. The first one I found was the White Lady of Kinsale. So Charles Fort was a military fortress designed to defend against approaching enemies. A young soldier from Charles Fort married a local girl. The union commemorated with a festival and joyous celebration. The groom had watch duty on his wedding night, but the full day of heavy drinking got the better of him and he fell asleep while on watch. This was a huge dereliction of duty in the eyes of command. He was found sleeping at his post by his captain and unceremoniously shot on the spot. When his bride learned of her new husband's execution, she jumped to her death from one of the fort's walls. Her distraught spirit never moved on. She became known as the White Lady of Kinsale. Her ghost has been spotted both outside and inside the fort. Always in a long white dress, she sometimes smiles at young children and women. A nurse spotted the apparition standing over a bed of a child who was sleeping. Soldiers stationed at the fort report a much different spirit. Several captains swear they were pushed down a flight of stairs by an unseen force. The White Lady of Kinsale was thought to be responsible for this, angry about what happened to her husband.
Yeah, that would be very unfortunate.
Yes. The next two I got from an actual Irish newspaper. They were reposting local stories that they had collected over the years. And so this one is called The Woman in White. Pat Gill of the county of Kildare was driving towards Dublin with a load of country produce. He made a comfortable seat for himself on the cart and had plenty of hay about him and under him. He was presently employed thinking of nothing in particular, dozing and giving an eye to the proceeding of his horse. He was between the mill of Baltracy and the crossroads of Borheen, when he was startled by the appearance of a woman dressed in a long white clothes, crossing the fence and advancing into the road. She came up to the horse and walked on with him close by his neck, by the horse's neck. The driver chucked the beast's head in the opposite side for fear he would tread on her feet or long robes, but she still kept close to him as before. And sometimes he thought he could see the lower part of the horse's foreleg through her dress. The matter had now become very serious. He could not keep his eyes off the apparition, and he felt his whole frame covered with a cold perspiration. He became bewildered, and he could not determine either on going on or stopping. So the horse, finding matters left to himself, jogged on, apparently unconscious of his fellow fayware. The center of the crossroads of Borheen is or was occupied by a patch of green turf, and when they came to the edge, the white figure stood still, while a portion of the shaft of the cart on the side seemed to pass through her. Gill, observing this, drew the beast at once to the other side, crying in a voice made tremulous by terror, "By your leave, ma'am." On went the horse and cart, the edges of the load preventing him from seeing the white form. Having advanced 2 or 3 yards, he looked back, fearing to see a mangled body on the road behind him, but he instead saw the white appearance standing in the center of the plot of grass, her hand seemingly to shade her eyes as she looked earnestly after him. Terrified as he was, he never turned his gaze till a bend in the road cut off his view. So this story, it's written kind of weirdly, and I'm not really sure why the newspaper would write it that way. But to me, it seemed like this farmer who was carrying produce while he was riding in his cart had a woman in white come up from the side of the road and walk with him for a while. When they got to the crossroads, some part of the cart basically went through her, and he was so scared by it that he was afraid that he'd run her over or hurt her in some way. When he looked back, she was just standing on this plot of grass, making sure that he was okay, looking after him, you know, as he went on his way. And once again, the thing that struck me about this story so much was just, once again, a woman wearing white clothes on the side of a road, kind of like the hitchhiking stories that we did a couple of weeks back. It's just another one of those particular stories that we find so fascinating.
Yeah, to be honest, I had a little hard time focusing on the story while you were reading it because it's just worded strangely. Does it have a year for the newspaper of when it was written?
It did not have a year that I saw. It was just a collection of stories. And like I said, it is, and the next one's written a little weird too. And when I tried to paraphrase it to make it sound better, I kind of felt like I lost like the essence of the story. So I left it just as the newspaper printed it. And I don't know if it's because it's an older story and it was kind of written in English that was more common at the time, and the way they wrote things, that's my guess. But I couldn't find anything that said, you know, this is the reason that we did it.
That's my guess too. That's why I asked you the year. Yeah.
Yep. So the last one that I have for this week, and I saved this one for last only because it's a little different, because this one's titled "The Woman in Red" instead of "White." The neighborhood of Borheen, Baltracy, and Rathcoffee was blessed, or the contrary, in times past by fortune teller and charm concoctor. Molly Anthony was her by name. So unedifying was her life and the conversation that the priest refused to have any religious service performed for her after her death. She left a son who had acquired some skill in curing cattle by herbs and did not pretend to any supernatural gifts. A farmer, Pat Ben, at whose house he remained about a fortnight and who was well pleased with his performances, was passing near the Green Hill in his jaunting car, accompanied by Jack Anthony, the doctor, when on a sudden an old woman in a red cloak appeared to them between the bushes on the road fence and cried, "Jack, it's time for you to come." "Sir," said Jack to his patron, "will you excuse me for a minute while I go say a word to this neighbor of mine?" "Oh, to be sure." Jack got on the fence and passed through the bushes, but the farmer was surprised at not subsequently hearing the sound of his or her voice. He waited for about a space of a minute and then bade his servant climb the fence and see if Jack was about to return. The servant did as he was told, and the master, observing him look along the inner side of the ditch, nod to the left and then to the right and then straight before him with a perplexed expression of face. The master sprung down, joined his servant, and found he had a long range of vision right and left and then up the sloping side of the Green Hill, and no bushes or rocks to afford concealment. Neither Jack nor the red cloaked woman were in view. And it was months before the doctor presented himself before his patron, and even his account of his disappearance was not consistent in all its parts. The writer was acquainted with Pat Ben and Jack Anthony, and heard the former relate the adventure. So once again, this is a very weirdly written story, but I wanted to share it the way it was written instead of trying to paraphrase it. So the way I took the story is that the woman, who was a fortune teller and charm concoctor that the local priest did not get along with at all, her name was Molly Anthony, and her son, who was a doctor, was named Jack Anthony. The farmer, Pat, was staying with Jack Anthony. Had stayed at his house for a fortnight, which I believe is like 2 weeks or so. And when Jack and Pat were riding in a cart, that's when this woman approached them. And then the doctor left with the woman. They disappeared from sight. And it was months later when the farmer, Pat, met back up with the doctor, Jack. And Jack never really gave a good explanation of how he disappeared from the side of the road.
That's a strange one.
It is a little weird. And like I said, I really didn't want to paraphrase this because it was obviously written a long time ago, and it kind of gives, you know, a little essence of how people told stories back then, or the way they spoke back then even.
Yeah, I think that was a good idea to just read it the way it was written. Yeah, I don't have much to say on that one because I don't really know what I think about that one.
Yeah, it just, for me, it was fun just because it had been reprinted by an Irish newspaper about a local Irish legend. And that's the reason I wanted to share that one.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's always neat when you find stuff like that in an old newspaper.
For sure. Well, Laura, I think our time's just about up for this week.
I guess that's it for today. So, links to contact us are in the show notes. midnight_inthemountains@yahoo.com. Send us your paranormal stories that are true that we could read on air if you want to share them with us. Find us on Instagram, midnight_inthemountains. And that's about it for this week.
Yeah, I hope everybody enjoyed our trip down St. Patrick's Day and some of the stories and legends and folklore that we found. Have a good rest of the week.
We'll talk to you guys later.